Good day, eh?
Good day.
Good day, and welcome to another episode of Forgeside Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy emphasis on the Great White North.
We're talking about Canada, and you have heard that voice before. That's one of our previous guests, Nick Welsh, sitting down with us today from Twisted Metal, and of course,
Twisted Steel.
Sorry, my bad.
All good. And
of course, Lando Novak sitting down with you again today, as always. And we've got a guest with us today coming in from Quesnel, British Columbia. We've got Jeremy Micheluk sitting down with us. Did I say that right, Jeremy?
It's Micheluk, but close.
Micheluk. Awesome. Thanks, bud. So Jeremy has been making knives for a while now. He started off in the construction business back when he was younger, worked through that for 25 years, decided that making is where his heart truly has always lied, and jumped into the knife business, moved up to Quesnel, British Columbia, built himself a beautiful shop, and the man is running himself full-time. You're saying you've got a little bit of a side hustle gig going on right now, too, that's kind of the opposite of how the majority of us are doing things. Usually we work full-time jobs and do work on you got what I'm saying. Anyways, he's got a job, he's working full-time making knives as well, so he's trying to, you know, hustle and grind, as our boys Ryan Chadbourne and Noah Bloomberg put it. Before we jump into that, let's see what Nick's been up to, man. How you been doing, Nick?
Well, I've been doing really well. Business has kind of taken off. I'm a full-time guy. This is all I do, blacksmithing and just general blacksmithing. And our big thing is we do knife making classes. So we're up to 7 2x72 grinders now and a disc grinder. And we're taking classes up to 10 people. So yeah, it's been really busy. Really crazy busy.
Do you remember what episode you were?
Oh, 31.
Put you on the spot. Oh, yeah, buddy.
Whoa. Nice. Yeah.
Apparently, so if you want to hear Nick's story, head over to episode 31 and find out who this dude is and what he's doing over at Twisted Steel.
That was off the top of my head. I must be a Forgeside Chat nerd. Apparently, I am. Apparently. I don't know how that happened. But here I am.
That's awesome, buddy. Good for you for remembering that.
Yeah, weird. It was in March. I remember that. Actually, we were just chatting about that tonight. I was having dinner with my stepmom and dad. It was her birthday, and we were talking about being on the show tonight, and they were asking me last time I was on. So there you go.
So almost a year ago then.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Very cool. So in the last year, How much has things changed for you in the last year, do you say?
Oh, well, we've got a 25-pound Canadian giant that we just dumped a bunch of money into. We got some parts from Little Giant down in Nebraska, and we've got a 25-ton press, and man, we are cranking out Damascus billets like crazy. It's cool. It's been really good. Yeah, some really cool pattern stuff too. So yeah, there's
are you the main man behind the billet making, or
I do a lot of it, but we actually have we've got two people that work for us now. A buddy of mine, Jody, he's kind of part-time now. He got a real paying job, so that's what he's doing. And then we've got a young girl who joined us last March or April, and she was a farrier, and she got tired of getting kicked and stepped on by horses, and she decided to come in and give us a hand. And now she makes a lot of Damascus. She was doing up 4 bars today, and we did a bar yesterday. Yeah, built a pot rack and a towel, 2 6-foot-long towel bars for a condo that's going up here in town. That's owned by
one
of the dealership guys in Red Deer. And not to brag, but I saw his bathroom. He has a $10,000 toilet. I kid you not. I kid you not. Yeah. But anyhow.
Money, yeah, hey?
So, yeah.
You're going to force me into a political conversation here, buddy. Easy, easy.
Sorry. Didn't mean to. Didn't mean to. I was just blown away by a $10,000 toilet.
No kidding, so, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
So is this... does the was the towel bar Damascus then? Is
no. Okay. We just man, I only charged him about $125 a bar. So yeah, that would be really cheap Damascus.
No kidding,
but,
eh?
Yeah, yeah. No, it was just a 1/2-inch round bar that we bent into a 6-foot long towel bar, and then a brace in the middle. And there's two of them. They go on either side of his island. So
oh yeah.
Yeah,
you install cool. that yourself, or you leave that
no,
up to him?
No, we let the carpenter do that, the contractor. But we made handmade nails for all the fitting everything on, and we made corner caps for the island table as well. So, yeah, yeah.
So you're not just making knives, eh?
No, you know what? My first love is the creative stuff. I love nice. Doing creative stuff. But knives pay the bills, so that's what we do.
That makes sense to me, man. You know what? I know this too. Like, I know if I dove into knives, I'd be busy. The orders would be there. I'd be building knives. But that's why I'm not making knives, because I know if I start making knives, I'm just going to make knives. And I want to keep my creative stuff going, man.
But like I say, there's no reason it doesn't have to.
Well, right?
Jeremy, you're mostly a bladesmith, but you do creative work as well.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I've made, tables, trailers. I've done some flowers. I actually, first time using a torch, I cut out of a old Studebaker hood. I just kind of rough cut out some leaf, so like a big daisy kind of shape.
Yeah.
And then cold hammered it all. And
oh, very cool.
So my mom has one, and I made some mushrooms as well. And it's kind of funny. Yeah. In the bedroom, there's a, it's like a bell. The mushroom's like a bell, so it's kind of like a sign. So
yeah,
no, mushrooms cool. and lots of different small stuff.
Well, you're in Quesnel, of course you're going to talk about mushrooms,
right? And in BC, so
yeah.
So the knife making side of things is what's keeping you pretty busy though right now, or is it the art, or where are you finding yourself right now?
Is that for me?
Yeah, for yourself, Jeremy, yeah. Sorry.
I'm trying to do as many knives and stuff as possible, but the sales of knives is kind of is not as easy as what I thought it was going to be. So that's why I'm doing a part-time gig. I'm working at Cal Tire.
Oh yeah.
Okay. But it helps with the bills and I want to try and focus on knives and other small blacksmithing stuff, but yeah, it's just kind of a hard sale right now in this economy. So
oh, I hear that. And that's kind of where things have been going lately with a lot of the makers. They're struggling in the last few months, year even. Kind of depends on how you play your cards, but you noticing any of that, Nick, as well? Or
yeah, I've noticed that too. We're a little different, and it really hasn't hit us. Like we're ramping up. It's and I really don't mean to rub that in, but I've noticed that there's a few local blacksmiths here, and I've noticed that they've kind of tapered down a little bit. It hasn't been quite as peachy keen for them. Some really awesome stuff that's out there, but man, it's, you've got to find that niche and break into it. I think that's the only way to really weather these, these hard times.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of knives do you, What do you make your knives out of? Is it more recycled stuff, or you use new steel, or what do you do with your
I've
stuff?
I've got a big rack of steel that I've purchased previous, and it's all known. I really like doing Damascus, so I make my own Damascus, and Yeah. So I got 5920 and 1084 mostly. I've got some 52-100. I've just got a big bucket of 5160 spring steel. I just forged out a couple knives out of that.
Yeah. How did you find that stuff to forge, bud?
It wasn't too bad with the press. It really kind of it helps to draw that out real quick, right?
Because I got I commented on your post. I got the same stuff, man. The exact same spring steel. I've got a supplier here in Winnipeg that I pick some up from. That stuff's hard to move by hand, bud.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I just get it down to a good stock size, and then hammer to shape. Right.
Looks like you had what was it, 3/8 thickness that you had there, or what thicknesses are those?
I think that was a little bit less than 3/16.
Oh, dude, that's nice.
Just out of curiosity, the Studebaker that you cut up, you didn't save any spring steel from that, did you?
It was only a hood that was on the property that I bought.
So I've heard this story about a knife maker that was in Montana who passed away in the 80s, I believe. But he swore up and down that Studebaker spring steel was the pinnacle of knife making steel. And
No, I wish I did. Anyways. I do have an old dump truck leaf spring. So it's about 5 feet long. And I did, I did a big kukri. Actually, it's right here somewhere. A nice size kukri out of it. And that was all by hand before I had a press. Oh, that was
look at that kukri, listeners. Isn't that amazing? he didn't actually pull it out. I'm just fucking with you.
Whoa.
No, but I'll get it eventually.
Yeah. But no, that's awesome.
So what got you into the knives, bud? Where did it start?
I think it was watching the Fortune Fire TV show is really kicked my interest more of making knives. I saw it happening and I was like, I can do that. And I looked at, researched an anvil and got what I got a small shitty one first and then got a much better one. But and then just kind of started going with making stuff. And
what kind of anvil do you have now?
It's a 125 kg rigid penning house.
Oh, those are good. Yeah,
that was my question, by the way, Nick. What the fuck?
Sorry, buddy. I stepped on your toes. Jeez.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful the petting house has the like squarish horn or flat horn on one side, round horn on the other, right? Yeah,
that's right. Nice. Yeah, yeah. That's beautiful. Because I was working construction and making good money, there was a couple of purchases that were with my income tax return. So the Penninghaus was one of them, and that wasn't not a cheap endeavor, but definitely worth it. Definitely,
yeah. Yep.
Right. Have you taken any classes or anything like that to get to where you are now, or where are you learning?
Mostly self-taught. I bought my forge from this guy, Rusty. I think it's Laidlaw Forge Works, or I believe it's Laidlaw Forge or Laidlaw Forge Works. And, he's a little rusty guy. Like he's about 5 foot nothing. And it's hilarious cause he's a little rusty. He made my forge and, I missed where I was going with that.
he made your forge.
Did he teach you anything? Or
yes, actually, I did my first one class with him, forged out a knife at his place, and then that was it, and then just online looking and the YouTube thing.
You got a YouTube channel University that you gravitate towards?
Black Bear Forge. I watched a lot of.
John.
No, Walter's. What's his name?
Walter Searles.
Earls, yeah. Lots of his stuff.
That's one guy that I actually haven't watched a lot of because it's all knife making on his end, right?
Yeah.
John Switzer, Black Bear, I've watched a lot of his stuff.
Right, yeah, I've seen some of his as well, yep.
Was the knife thing the first thing you did, or was it artistic first, or were you doing anything before the Forged in Fire endeavor?
Yes, actually, that's when I did the those flowers out of the Studebaker hood. I made a big moose rack kind of security bars for my window in my shop. There's a picture on Instagram for that.
Cool.
And that was all cold bending. I actually made some couple of sawhorses that are out of three by three by quarter steel, maybe 4x4, but some couple of sawhorses, and then welded a big T, an angle kind of on it, and there was a hole in the middle, then put it in there and just hammered till I had it bent to what I wanted it to. And so a lot of it was just cold foraging first, I guess, not foraging, but hammering.
It's oddly enough, you know, it's you get into this whole blacksmithing game or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm blacksmithing now, I'm using an anvil and I'm using a forge. And then, you know, for me, that's where I was at with it. You know, it was about 7 years ago, I finally got myself a forge and an anvil, and I started playing with hot steel, and it was like, why wasn't I doing this before? But I look back,
so much
easier. I did a lot of stuff cold, though. Like, if you look back at a lot of my previous work that I did before I had a forge and an anvil, I was still doing blacksmithing-esque style work. So,
yeah, I guess if you're hammering steel, if it's cold or hot, it's still really blacksmithing.
Well, at what point do you call it blacksmithing?
Right.
Oh. Well, I mean, even blacksmiths use welders, and I mean, the line is so blurred as to welder or blacksmith, really. I mean, I think a blacksmith is somebody who calls himself a blacksmith, works with metal, and does blacksmithy things, right?
Yeah. And a welder is a guy that works with metal and doesn't do blacksmithy things.
You know, more of a fabricator, really, you know.
With my new, not really my new name, but I got stickers now, and so I'm kind of naming my company kind of JM Forge Fab. So I kind of forge and fab.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because it makes sense to me.
Like I said, I did tables and trailers and whatever really that I need to put together to make things that I need. I always make things way stronger than what you can buy, so I don't break stuff.
Yeah, I'm guilty of that too. I think that's a very similar trait with all blacksmiths. I mean, you know, we're not making them out of chinesium, that's for sure.
Hey, you know what?
Hey, yeah. Love you too, buddy. Yeah.
That's a Lakeside Kolsch from Lake of the Woods Brewing Company.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm having Kraken Attacks Alberta.
Kraken Attacks Alberta.
Yeah. It's
that sounds awesome.
It's the Kraken spiced rum.
Right.
But it's limited edition. It attacks Alberta. So yeah. Oh, I thought that was pretty cool.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do the beer anymore. Beer makes me too gassy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what happens. Got the gluten issue or whatever.
I don't know. I think it's age. It's getting old. That's what it is.
I had to double take there for a second. I thought you said AIDS. I was like, oh.
No. Age.
Yeah. I feel that, man.
Getting old. Yeah.
I'm getting old. Yeah. It doesn't pay well, does it?
Yeah.
Hey, at least you're not getting itchy butthole like Justin gets.
That's rough.
It is after a night of drinking beer.
Whoa. That's more info than I ever needed to know about Justin. But there we go.
And I don't know. I'm speculating.
Has he asked you to itch it for him? That's the only real question.
No, I.
Oh, well, then you're good. You're good.
I don't.
Good.
We haven't drank that much together yet, I guess.
Yeah.
So you got a little bit of background in welding then too, Jeremy?
No, that was all self-taught as well. I traded traded some weed for a welder and I built a welding cart.
Good trade.
Yeah. And then, I just kind of went from there and it was all after work and what I could do or whatever, but yeah, it's, not any training at all, but I can definitely stick steel together, and my side-by-side trailers shows, right? I've had that for 6-7 years now, and
cool,
everything's still
stick
solid.
Well there, or?
I got a upgraded from the Craftsman that I traded to. I bought a Miller 211 dual voltage or whatever, so I can put a plug, a 110 plug or a 240 plug on it.
Yeah,
basically take it into the house if I needed to or whatever.
Yeah,
oh, those are nice glue guns, man.
Yeah, works really well.
So how long you been doing that for? Longer than the forging stuff, or
definitely, yeah. That's been probably at least 10, 12 years, maybe longer, maybe more. Hmm. Been quite a while sticking steel together and always wanting to do stuff with steel, because woodworking is good. You can make real nice stuff with wood and everything, but if you cut it a little bit too short, you can't just weld wood together. So
I feel like steel short
or anything, but you know,
I feel like the tool shed cougar should have made an appearance by now. Oh, tell me about your tool.
Yeah, show me your tools.
Oh. I'm your tool. Tools. Tools. Oh, is that your press? Is that a coal iron work, buddy?
Yeah, it is.
Nice. Is that a 12 ton or?
It's 16 plus.
Right, 16 on. Plus C frame.
Yeah.
Yeah,
nice. Very nice. That's super sweet.
Yeah, works very well for sticking Damascus together.
Oh yep. Yeah,
I started out with my first press was a 9 ton from Canadian Tire, and
mm-hmm.
made the dies for it. It worked. It worked great. But when I upgraded, I sold that to someone else for I think I gave it to him for $50, and it was just back to log splitter. Wow. for that guy.
But
yeah, it worked out pretty good.
You know, it's really amazing, because I find other guys that are just starting blacksmithing and all that kind of stuff, and that seems to be where my old tools go. You know, yeah. I mean, you sell it at a good discount, so they're getting something that's you know, a good value and still has some life in it, but it's sparking somebody else to, you know, start beating on some steel, right. Start moving something, you know? Yeah. So, so sounds like you've gotten a lot of tools either by trade, good trades, by the way, good trades. And, that coal iron works, what made you decide to go with, coal iron works rather than build your own press?
The time, I think, just I will.
Yeah.
I think I'm a capable fabricator, but I think just the amount of time that it would have taken me to build the press, I weighed the mm-hmm. options and was like, no, I'm just going to bite the bullet and buy a really good accredited one. Like, right. And they've been amazing.
They're super engineered. They're a beautiful machine.
And not just that, the guys as well. There was screw ups in shipping, and they super overcompensated me for a screw up. So I'm extremely happy with Coal Ironworks.
That's good to hear, bud. Did you shop around a bit looking at any of the different press companies, or Coal Iron just kind of stuck out like a sore thumb to you?
I think probably because it was on that Forge and Fire show, it was kind of sticking out, and the different colors, and having a green one was I love the green, right? So
yeah, smart marketing on their end there, bright colors,
right?
Yeah, shiny for the win, man.
There was a guy in Ontario. I'm not sure if he still makes them or not, but I was going to go with him, and I think his is actually a press / hammer.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
the Juggernaut.
Yes, I believe. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to look at that, but when I priced out the Coal Ironworks and stuff, and I didn't even really price out the Juggernaut, but I just went with the Coal Ironworks. I'm not sure exactly why. I like good tools. Not saying the Juggernaut's not good at all, but I'm not sure why I did it, but.
Yeah. No, the Juggernaut's a very well-engineered piece of equipment as well. That's Brad, I say his name is Brad Kushner. Out of Broad River Forge.
Yeah.
And he's got a couple different presses that he makes. He's got one that's like a 50-ton press is the one that he really, really likes to push on people. And it's a really nice press, too.
That's a lot of squeeze. That's a lot of squeeze. Well? Oof.
Pardon me?
Wasn't a hammer as well?
No, the Juggernaut's a little bit different than that one. Getting some dings there. Oh well, not the end of the world.
Sorry, your other phone? It's my iPad, and I don't know how to shut it off.
I was gonna say play fetch with the dog, but dog will bring it back then.
Yeah. All right.
No worries.
Sorry.
We're real people doing real things here. Come on now. What do you want from us? Even on the most professional of podcasts that I listen to, they still have, no, that's not true. Some of the really professional ones are pretty professional. I guess what I'm thinking of when it comes to professionals, not really that professional. Okay, so we're not the professional. Take off, eh?
I don't know. I'm just going to chuck that over there.
Yeah, so you're kind of new to Quesnel too. Like you haven't been there for a super long time. You were South British Columbia before that, right?
Yeah, we were in the Fraser Valley. Basically, I moved from Calgary in 1980. So, and lived in the Fraser Valley since. And then last September, 18 months ago, 16 months ago, we moved up here. The wife and I decided to I decided to get out of construction, and we decided that moving north is and into the interior where it's housing's cheaper. And
so, sorry to interrupt. So, just for the common listener at home, where exactly is the Fraser Valley in BC?
That's a good question. I don't. So, yes, good call.
Yeah,
just east of Vancouver, about 70 kilometers, 50 to 70 kilometers east of Vancouver, BC.
So yeah, Vancouver. So,
like, well, it's essentially Vancouver. Chilliwack, that kind of.
Yeah, Vancouver.
Yeah, yeah.
It's essentially Vancouver.
Where it flooded last year.
Correct.
That area.
If you go to those places, the discern from Vancouver to Chilliwack and Mission and Langley, you can't tell the difference. I mean, Hope is a little bit further out, though, right?
Yeah, I think it's only about 30K from Chilliwack, though. So it's about 100 from Vancouver. I believe Chilliwack is about 70 from Vancouver.
Oh, wow. I didn't think Hope was getting that close already. Wow.
Yeah, cool. It's not a lot further out. And I was actually in DeRoche, which was just across the Fraser River from Chilliwack. On the north side of the river.
On the north side, okay. You ever go hang out at the Harrison Hot Springs?
Not a lot at the Hot Springs in Harrison Hot Springs. We went to the Clear Creek Hot Springs because that was kind of my backyard. Which is about,
this isn't one I know of.
50, I think it's 50 or 70 kilometers east on East Harrison East Harrison Forest Service Road.
Okay.
And it's really
public.
Four-wheel drive to get in. So
okay, this is what I like.
Kind of a private, but it, every couple of years, if they're logging or whatever, they'll redo the road. So sometimes it's really good, and sometimes it's really busy. So yeah. Not as good.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But there was a lot of vandalism and stuff and that had happened, and but people have rebuilt and stuff, so it's been a while since I've been there.
Yeah. You got hot springs up in Quinnell at all area, or
I'm not sure if there is.
Not that you found yet.
They'd be frozen now though. Yeah.
How cold is it there right now?
Actually, it's not that cold right now. I think it's just zero or minus one or something.
Oh, how cold is
it where you are, Nick?
In the -15. No, -15. Yeah.
Last week it was -20 pretty much all week.
Yeah.
It is -34 here right now.
Oh, gross.
Oh, gross.
With the wind chill, it's -41. It is supposed to be -44 overnight, dude.
Oh.
Oh.
Gross.
Welcome to Winterpeg.
Oh, that's horrible. That's horrible.
It will be zero on Monday.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
That's such a huge swing.
Right? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And in a couple of, well, not a couple months, in like 5 months, it'll be +30 outside.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. Have you, so you moved there in the summertime then?
September of 2001.
You got nice summers there?
Yeah. So far it's been, yeah, great. Yeah. But I looked at the houses right in the peak of that heat dome, the hottest summer ever in the lower main or in BC or whatever, when the town of Linton burnt, and that was a pretty brutal forest fire season and stuff. Yeah. So going back and forth, it was actually one of the hottest days that I came up to Quinnell and did a kind of a fire run. I drove up in the morning, met the realtor, looked at 9 houses, and then drove back home, and it's a 6-hour drive, 600 kilometers. So that was kind of a blitz kind of thing. And right in the, like I said, in the heat, super heat of the summer. Thankfully the truck has air conditioning that works well.
That's good. Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, we moved up in September, mid-September of 2021.
I'm just trying to think, how far north is Quinnell from Kamloops?
I bet it's 350 kilometers.
It's pretty much straight north of Kamloops, isn't it?
Yeah, but not as a crow flies. Yes,
right.
Not by road though, because to go to Kamloops, you either have to go up to Prince, 110 or so kilometers north to Prince George, and then follow the 16. Which will go through Clearwater, Valemont, Clearwater, and Barrier, and then into Kamloops. Or you go south from here into Williams Lake, Hunter Mile, and then take the other road that goes into Hunter Mile, or from Hunter Mile to Barrier, and then into Kamloops. So it's definitely not a straight road at all.
No, far from it. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere where you are, but not really, because that stretch of highway goes to Prince George, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's actually 100. Like we just interviewed Jesse Lambert, which is, he's a bit north of you in, I can't remember the name of the town he's in, but he's not too far north of you.
Yeah.
He's a really good knife maker. Fort St. John. Gosh. He's in Fort St. John. Yeah. You. Yeah.
Man, this guy is like a freaking book. He knows it all. You probably know more about Forgeside Chat than I do, bud.
Well, I don't know about that. I do recall that episode, though. I mean, Jesse Lambert really blew me away with Cat Dozer Blades.
And
what he had figured out with that steel. Did you hear that, Jeremy, or did you listen to that podcast?
No. I haven't yet.
Man, no. It's only a couple podcast. Well, it's last week, so I'd go in and give it a listen. It is really good. Yeah, he's Yeah, no, and
just last week I did listen to it. But
we got a little bit deep into talking about emotional stuff there at the end there,
yeah,
and
yeah,
mental health and whatnot.
Yeah, and we're hoping Nick Fabre has a speedy recovery. And, well, yeah,
that was nice of you. Yeah, man.
Well, man, I feel for the guy. I mean, and I really admire his bravery for standing up and saying, "Hey, there's something wrong here. I need to get it fixed." And I mean, that's not an easy thing. And I think mental health is such a fine line sometimes. And you know, it was really, man, and to come out on the air and say it, like,
yeah,
holy cow,
that blew me away. And I asked him, I was like, "You want me to take that out, dude? No, it's fine. It is what it is."
That's yeah, no, that is like so brave. I'm so impressed by him, and I'm really, really hoping that he has a speedy recovery and he finds the answers he's looking for. Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's, yeah,
yeah, man, dude. I am so fucking stoked on getting to know him and having him by my side for the show. He is a solid fucking dude, like super solid.
Yeah.
A lot of respect for him,
and he knows his stuff. Like,
yeah, that's, man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's really impressive. There's a lot of days that I think I'm a hack. But yeah, especially after you listen to Nick Fabre, oh my god, I suck at this. It.
I'm a sponge next to that guy, man. Just like, come
yeah,
on,
yeah.
Let it out. Who's, buddy, I'm here to absorb.
Who were your influences, Jeremy?
Good question, man. Jeez, you know, look at you just lining them up.
Someone that I really look at and admire their work is Token Tobin. Yeah, I really love the work that he does. And definitely, it inspires me what he does. That I want to do similar work that he, like him.
He has a really interesting beginning, the way he took his approach to knife making. He was just pumping them out as fast as he could and selling them for dirt cheap until he made a name for himself. And then he's like, okay, people know who I am. They want my knives. They're hungry for it. Yeah. Now it's go time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of respect for that kid, man.
Yeah.
Kid.
Yeah.
Same age as me. We're all kids, right? Like, shit. At what point do you actually stop calling yourself a kid? When you die?
50. For me.
Don't say that.
I'm only a couple years away.
I'm
over a year away from 50.
I'm a month and a bit.
I turned 41 in a couple weeks.
Oh, pop. Young pup. Right? Yeah. yeah. So, what else? What's your favorite thing to make as far as knives go? I'm guessing that knives are your gig. That's what you like doing.
I do. I really like doing knives.
What are you, a kitchen knife guy, hunting guy?
Hunting knives for sure.
Yeah,
you know what? I didn't bring my other Oh yeah, I did.
It's in my back pocket. Hold on. Oh, it's in my other back pocket.
It's hard with this cord attached to my head.
Yeah,
I've whipped it off my head by accident a couple times, or caught my arm on and snapped my head down.
So I did the little, I call it the. Little smoky, you know. How well you can see.
Very
that.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's only six inches long. Little Kydex sheath. I make them as well. But
nice.
Inspired by my buddy. His name is Jamie, but everybody called him Smoky, so I call this the little smoky. And
right on.
Just little everyday, and I've done a few Damascus hunter knives and stuff, and.
Yeah,
one with the gut hook, and the owner loves it. So I love doing, my favorite is Damascus, and really I'm a hunter, so hunting is really what I like, but I kind of do any kind of knife.
So far it's just been
what I've wanted to make, not really had anybody ask me for anything specific. So
you made the Kydex sheath. Do you do any leather work as well, or?
I tried, and my big digits aren't so good for small needles and stuff. So
yeah, Kydex is definitely easier.
It is. I think it is. Yeah. There's a leather guy in town. He's recently moved here from Ontario. I got to hook up with him again, and I think gonna get him to make a couple leather sheaths for me. I think he's a leather wizard.
Awesome.
Like on an Instagram?
I don't know if he's got an Instagram page.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know where his card is.
Yeah. Well, Quesnel is awesome hunting area.
Yeah. Are you? So,
yeah.
Buddy, have you made buddies with Mike Jones yet? He's in the Quesnel area.
I haven't. It's somebody that I wouldn't mind, you know, chatting with, hanging out with, and meeting him and whatever.
For sure.
Because we're, you know, both knife makers and whatnot, but definitely I haven't talked to him yet, but one day we'll cross paths. And I actually went into I think it's called the Long Table, and his better half, I believe, is part owner or part runs that place. I'm not sure exactly. I always passing out cards, and the person behind the counter said, "Oh, do you know Mike Jones? I haven't met him yet, actually, but here's my card." So trying to drum up as much business as I can, just giving out cards everywhere and
100%
cards and stickers.
Sure.
And
yeah, no, for sure. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. I had a question. It was there, and it just derailed right in front of you. So,
it happens.
Yeah.
Welcome to my brain, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, work. Right.
So you were telling us about your. Sorry, go ahead, Nick. You got it? No. Okay.
Nope,
you're telling
ahead.
Us about the tools in your shop, and we got to, you know, we know your anvil, we know your hydraulic press that you've got going on. What's your favorite hammers? Tell me about this. Is in lieu of Nick Fabre not being here, this was his question. Tell us about your hammers.
I can't remember where I ordered it from, but I've got a 1¾-pound cross peen, and it works really well. And being in construction for a long time, I actually have probably 30 to 40 different small hammers that I've kind of cut and adjusted and whatever, and way too many hammer heads. I've always, whenever I broke one off the handle, that one's going to the garbage, I'll bring it home. And so I kind of have a problem. Yeah. Way too many hammers.
Hi, my name's Nick, and I have a problem. Broken hammer heads.
I do have a hammer coming that I'm really excited about. It'll be my first dog's head hammer, coming from Kind Rat Forge, from Paul Kind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm cool. Excited about that. That should be, I don't know, whenever it gets here, it happens. But,
he's not too far from you either.
No, he's, I think, in just outside of Smithers, which is northwest.
Yeah.
A couple hundred kilometers.
Have you tried making your own?
I haven't. I saw Jason at Thompson Steel, and he had a bunch of I think it was 2.5 by 1 5/8 or something square, 4140. So I bought 2 bars of it, and probably too much, but I haven't done anything with them yet except for a spark test. Comparing to some pins for a forklift. I believe that they're the same steel because the sparks were identical.
Pins and forklift tines are generally 4140.
Okay, that's good to know. So I haven't made any yet, but definitely that's on the bucket list in the yeah. not too far away future.
The short list bucket list.
Right. Yeah.
The bucket list that I know I'm actually going to take care of.
It might be, I might have those two bars of steel. I think they're 6 feet long, and I'll probably have those two bars for, I'm going to say probably a good part of 30 years.
I think you'll be surprised once you make that first hammer, once you punch and drift that hole and you see how fucking awesome it is, you're just going to be like, yeah, buddy, I think I'm making another one.
Right.
Or axes. You're going to walk yourself. You're in the right area for making axes, dude.
Yeah.
4140 is perfect for that.
Yeah. Yep.
No.
And you got yourself that core iron press. Make a breeze of making axes for you.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of your press, man. I've been using my, I don't know what range my hydraulic press is falling into for power. I should probably try to calculate it out, but I haven't yet. It's mediocre at best. I don't know. It looks really good. Gonna fly for very long. Yeah, it looks good. It's one thing. I mean, shit.
Yeah,
it's just three dressed up as a nine.
Yeah. No, it. You know, Lando hit it right on the head. You are right in the right area to be making axes. You know, and with that, you know, all you need is the punch and the keeper for your press, and then
exactly,
you know, start making some axes. Yeah.
You got a place that you go to for, you know, a place you gravitate towards for buying tools and supplies at all?
That would probably be Maritime Knife Supply.
just saying, Maritime Knife Supply is your number one place to go for all your knife making supplies. Yeah. And if you want to save yourself $100 on a Paragon or an Even Heat Kiln, we can do that for you. You can go into the checkout and use the code FSCKiln. That'll save you $100. Oh, and hey, don't forget you can buy 10 belts for the price of 9. Buy 9, get one free. Good deal. Just saying.
That's like 10% off.
That is.
Yeah. I'm good with math.
You're a mathematician.
I put in a thing for a steak flipper. I make steak flippers and fire pokers and stuff as well.
Yeah, pigtails, and,
So I made a couple and sent them to Nick for his brother's waffle there.
Oh yeah,
and cool. And I don't win things very often, but I actually won the VSM belt pack.
Oh, sick! Awesome, dude.
It was delivered today. Actually, I haven't even opened.
Oh, right on.
Now the problem is you have a 2x72 to put that on.
Good old Vasti grinder.
There we
awesome.
Go.
I was
wondering. Which model did you get?
The Rift.
Yeah.
Nice. I think it's one of the first, the first generation, first or second. It works hard and strong all day long.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Mike Jones swears by his as well. So
yeah.
I've known lots of people that say a lot of good things about Vashti. Maritime Knife Supply is carrying Broadbeck 2x72, and I don't know if you talk to anybody in the industry, Broadbeck is like the leader of the pack. So you can head over to Maritime Knife Supply and find yourself an awesome grinder package there that Lawrence supplies in Canada, if that's of interest to you, if you're looking for a really good belt grinder. Yeah. That's for our listeners, not for you yourself, obviously. You're already set there, so
I'm probably gonna have to get a second one eventually, just because it makes it easier than changing tool arms all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it'll be a Pilot or it'll be a Vashti again, because Joe in Logan Lake, or I guess he's in Merritt now, but he's phenomenal service and call him at any time and really personable and really great guy to deal with.
I thought so.
One of my I ordered a 14-inch contact wheel, and it wasn't balanced, so I sent it back. He sent me another one right away, and it wasn't at the higher RPM or whatever. It wasn't balanced, so I sent it back, and he actually stopped carrying them and stopped getting them. And they believe they were of quality from Poland, I believe. And
crazy.
And he actually stopped carrying them because he couldn't get them balanced.
So, huh. Wow.
Oh, 14 inches is
yeah. Oh, really? Oh, right on. Very good. Yeah. Actually, you know what? I just bought a new tool here. Well, about a month ago. I have never had a file guide, and I bought a really nice TR Maker file guide from Maritime Knife Supply. Nice. Just thought I'd throw that out. Yeah, no, yeah, it was a good service.
What kind of results are you finding with it?
Oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah. I've used it a little bit. I just made a hidden tang knife here a little while ago, and yeah, it was fantastic. I've always just eyeballed my bells, all my plunge lines, and been pretty close, but man, this makes it a real breeze.
Being not a knife maker whatsoever, but being very well versed with tools, obviously, at this point, should I, at what level on a scale of 1 to 10 consider getting a file guide if I want to make knives?
Do you want to make hidden tang knives?
Because like the ones that would go like inside of an antler type thing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get a file guide. Yeah. Get a file guide. Yeah, yeah. And really, they're not that expensive. I mean, compared to the other tools that you get in the shop, that one's not that bad. Quite
cheap. So, what does the file guide do for me exactly?
Well, it makes sure that your edges are all lined up because you've got two carbide pads. So
the plunge grinder here is like.
Nice. What is the plunge? What's the plunge line exactly? That's like where the sharp bevel starts. Part of the blade starts.
Yeah,
where the bevel starts in. Yeah, so
kind of like the heel of the blade, essentially.
Not really.
Okay. I don't know these terms very good, dude.
That's okay. In
between the ricasso and that's the ricasso.
Right? Yeah, that little gap there. Yeah. Yeah.
So in between the ricasso and the cutting edge of the blade, to make a nice.
See that little line that comes down in the blade? Yeah. That's your plunge line. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I'm also making a like strong point of getting a very good description out of you guys for the listeners here. Just saying.
See that line? That's it right there. See that line?
Yeah. Yeah. For all you guys that can see that line.
For the record, there's three of us that can see that line, and that's it. Yeah.
If you want to see that line, pick up a knife.
Pick up a knife. There you go.
Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting, man. And that's
so what,
plunge line, is that on kitchen knives too? Kitchen knives kind of go right to the very end of the blade, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's typically, right to the finger well.
Yeah.
Right to the finger well. Sharp right to the finger well too?
Well, just, up to where your index finger is kind of,
Yeah.
I mean, the finger well keeps your finger from sliding up onto the blade, but But
the finger well actually would be the portion of the blade that where the handle turns into the knife and the blade dips down below the handle to stop your hand resting.
Finger well is right where you place your index finger when you grab a knife. That's right, your finger well. Yeah. So actually, I was going to ask you about the Damascus you make. What's your typical layer count? What do you like to do? Do you like to do super high layer count, kind of a mid range layer count, or low layer? What's your go to really when you're making Damascus?
Recently, I've done I drew seven knives on a page, and then did five different Damascus layers, and they were ranging from 3 to 9, and just kind of did some low layer. I really like the low layer stuff. But I've also done 140 layer, and then 281 layer.
Oh, right on.
that was the 140 on either side, and then I put a quarter inch a ADCRV 2 core in it.
Nice.
So 281 layer, with, and it was kind of a rainbow raindrop slash ladder pattern, because I the dies that I got with a press, just used them, and I did both, so it kind of, it's kind of a mismatch, kind of a random pattern, but it's kind of turned out really cool, because it's got like the deeper raindrop with the ladder laddering in it as well.
There you go. On your Instagram?
No, I haven't finished that one yet.
Oh, you haven't finished that one yet? Okay.
And actually, I made a kukri out of that that one. That
build. So you like the kukris?
Yeah, I've only you like done two. Kukris. I've only done two, and the one was the one like is super raw and not very finished and whatever. And that's out of the 5160 dump truck leaf spring.
Right.
And that leaf spring is half inch thick by 3 inches wide. I think I cut it in half. It was a three or four inch piece by inch and a half by half inch. And I've got an 18 inch kukri out of it.
Right.
That was a hard hammer. That was definitely a hard hammer.
Yeah. No kidding.
I chopped many, many blackberries right against the chain link fence with that. And, not one chip or deformation in any of the blade. It's really quite a almost like an axe edge on it than a really nice sharp kukri. But
the neighbor is really happy about the neighbor's really happy about his chopped up chain link fence now.
Right, yeah. It was mine, but yeah. Watching me run around with an 18-inch kukri chopping
because
I did it outside of my gate as well, and I was using that, and one of the neighbors come by one day and kind of spooked me, and I was like, "What are you doing to get so close to me with a knife in my hand?" That was kind of a good humor thing.
Yeah,
I guess he kind of answered my question: is what do you use a kukri for?
Not blackberries up here. I haven't seen one blackberry bush in Quesnel whatsoever. And down in the southern part of BC, there's blackberries are rampant and they're taking over lots of different
places. Yeah. It's nice. I remember when I was I was in Mission. Yeah. And freaking along, you could stop on the side of the road and just like blackberries like crazy everywhere. Dude. Yeah.
That's how my yard was in DeRoche when I lived there. It was basically I had an acre and a quarter, and probably three quarters of it was covered in blackberries and fruit trees. So after I was done with it, I had most of the blackberries dealt with much more usable land, but still the blackberries were still coming, growing up and coming out. If you didn't keep it cut, they would be overtaking in no time.
So, didn't realize they were that invasive.
Oh, extremely. Yeah, they'll grow probably 4 feet and take over 4 feet of your grass per year, kind of thing.
Holy cow!
Oh, they're nasty. Yeah, delicious but nasty.
They're thorny as hell too. Like, you don't want to be falling in one of them bushes.
Yes, that is true. Brutal. So big fires with lots of blackberries and trying to just get rid of them, and you never get rid of them.
Yeah.
There you go. It's the root system. They spread by the roots, right?
Really, anywhere you cut it, it kind of multiplies. If you cut a piece and throw it over 10 feet over, that will root on either end of the cutting. It'll and root into the ground and then grow again and then spread like peas and beans and stuff. They'll just kind of spread and go everywhere, but they don't die like peas and beans do. Just a vine that takes over.
Crazy.
Wow.
Brutal.
Yeah. I was just thinking blackberry moonshine, but other than that, really, there's not much else.
There is food. A different kind of blackberry that doesn't have the thorns, so it's not as evasive. But that stuff, I think it's. I'm not sure where it's from. I knew a long time ago, but I don't live there anymore, so I forgot.
the domesticated blackberries.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have heard of Canarn, but Canarn is coming up August 3rd to 6th in Fergus, Ontario. It's Canada's biannual blacksmithing event that usually brings on a excellent array of demonstrators. This year we've got some really good ones that are going to be showing up. Peter Braskinix, Matt Jenkins, who are some of the other ones that are going to be there again? Matthew Collette. Brad Millman's going to be demonstrating there. How awesome is that? Super awesome. David Robertson. He's one of the main organizers of it as well. He'll be there. So I highly recommend checking that out. That's Canarn 13 in Fergus, Ontario, August 3rd to August 6th. You can go over to canarn.com and sign up now. They've got all the information on their website, or canarn.ca, sorry. Early bird registration deadline is June 1st, 2023. Yeah.
Awesome. But there you go.
That out there.
Good job. Good job.
Yeah, Ontario, not bad.
Yeah.
Well, oddly enough, it's right next door to me. But Fergus is 24-hour drive yet, so.
Oh.
Yeah, it takes 2 hours to get to the Ontario border from Winnipeg. Yeah. Takes 24 hours to drive to Toronto area. Yeah, and it's like, it's thick bush the majority of the way. For a good 12 hours of the drive, you're driving through thick bush. Wow. And then you start getting into a little bit of actual civilization once you get past Thunder Bay. In between Winnipeg and Thunder Bay, there's like, not much of anything, dude. No. It's pretty barren.
Yeah.
And it is true wilderness still exists in there. It's kind of the Canadian shield though, so it's pretty
there's Kenora, and then that's it until pretty much Thunder Bay.
Yeah, there's some
there's some
mining towns. Like Fort Francis is in there, and is it Dryden is in there too? Dryden, Ontario?
Yeah, Dryden. Yeah, Dryden's in there. Yeah.
Dryden's on the way. But outside of that, it's pretty bleak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've got to admit, I'm jealous that there's that many people in that close proximity. I mean, when you look at really, that Toronto GTA area, there are so many blacksmiths in that area. It's crazy, but there's so many people there.
It's great.
There's so much talent there.
People coming from the United States probably hear us talking about this, and they don't really understand it because it's like that almost everywhere in the United States.
Yeah.
So you growing up in Canada outside of Toronto or Vancouver area, it's so much different, dude. So much different.
It's like the population that's there is just, it blows me away. I'm used to long haul truck drive in that neck of the woods. I am so glad that I don't do that anymore. But it's mind blowing. Like the 401, getting onto the 401, that's just insane. It's
Especially in a big truck, I can imagine, bud.
Oh, yeah. But, it makes me, like Quinnell, sounds even better by the day when you have to deal with that kind of stuff.
I was driving when I was doing the construction. I would drive from DeRoche, basically Mission, into Surrey to White Rock, or even to UBC I was doing for a little while. And it was 1 to 3 hours in each direction every day. So
1 to 3 hours of driving that got you like 100 kilometer distance.
Oh no, not even. Yeah. It was 115 kilometers to Tawasin, and that was two and a half each direction. And it was 115 kilometers. Yeah, it was pretty gross. So now my commute here, I'm 10K up the Barkerville Highway and from Quesnel, and my commute is about 9 to 11 kilometers and the same amount of minutes, pretty much. So it's quite nice that the traffic is way less. I love this small town.
Yep, 100%.
I wonder. It is 9 kilometers for me to get to work, and it takes me 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's awesome. This is the closest.
I'm right in that same ballpark. Yeah.
If I lived, or if I worked just a little bit further, it would probably take me an extra 20 minutes to make it there, though, because of traffic. I'd start hitting the heavy traffic of the interior city. Yeah. I'm kind of on the exterior, so I'm lucky.
On the thing too, in the south coast of BC too, in the Vancouver area, if you left, I would leave my house at 5 a.m. for a 7 o'clock start and be there.
Oh my God.
In an hour and a half, and be there for 6:30. I was a foreman for a long time, so I had to do paperwork and everything. So I would leave super early just to get there and be there well ahead of time. And if you work later than 3 o'clock, you might as well stay till 5, because you're going to get home at about the same amount of time.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Disgusting.
That's why you moved, eh?
That is, yeah. That's a major reason why we moved, definitely.
What are you running for a forge, man?
Got the little, I call it the little rusty, I guess, or Rusty built it, and I bought it from him, the guy that I did my one class with. And
so it's a homemade job.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome though. I've used it for 4 or 5 years now, and the front of the steel where the flame comes out starting to show its age a bit now, but and I'll probably have to reline it, but yeah, it works really well. It's 10
Venturi
inches.
Burners.
I've got a single. It had a Venturi burner when I was foraging down in the south coast. I was foraging in a sea can, and I found that the Venturi burner, flame would back up into the Venturi, and kind of rebuilt it and did a blow forced air. So I've got a little Dayton fan on it, and it gets hot, and I got a nice 600-pound, a big huge 600-pound propane tank outside. I got it plumbed in when I got this case, and so no propane inside, and it works quite well.
Yeah. A shut off valve outside the shop, so that you shut it off outside the shop, or
there's one inside. There's a shutoff inside. There's actually, I've got two, so it's kind of a, but I asked the guy that plumbed it in if I needed to have shut it off outside every time, and he said no, I don't need to, because it's a ball valve.
A
quick quarter turn and it's turned off.
With having a propane tank, do you find that when it's really cold out, then you have problems with your? No,
yeah.
I guess 600-pound bottle, I guess, should probably be fine. Yeah,
I think at the -40 that it was before Christmas, because it's so cold outside, I just kept the fire. I got my wood stove in the shop to keep it heated is 27 inches deep and 20 by 20, so it's quite a big stove. And it would, when it was -40, it was still -5 in my shop, and my stove was almost blazing red hot, right? So
that sucks.
And my forge is a little bit it's through that door.
Okay.
I've got kind of a 2 40 by 13 bays, and with a main door that goes in, and my forge is just to that side, and so I close that door and it gets to like -30 in there. And
I gotta ask though, why in the world would you keep your forge in a different room than your press?
Yeah,
because it's a gravel floor, It's the only reason. And it's a wood floor in the other where I'm at now. So just to roll it in there, it's only, I don't know, 15 feet away. So it's not super terrible.
Not terrible bad.
Yeah.
I would think you'd still lose heat though.
Sure, but not super fast. And definitely right. Do. Yeah. Yeah. When I do pour the concrete floor, I plan on pouring concrete on that side. I will be moving the press closer to the forge for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Gonna make, when you go to pour that concrete, are you having preemptive plans to eventually put a power hammer in and pour a thicker portion for a power hammer and
most definitely
self-isolate that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Really got to wonder. I haven't bugged Steve about this enough, but he ended up busting one of the floor bolts on his power hammer. And I was asking him if he fixed it. He still hasn't fixed it yet because he's kind of humming and hawing as to how he's going to fix it. But I never asked him what he thought the actual cause of that was or if he understands what the cause of that was. I should bug him about that.
So what's your solution to fixing that bolt, Lando? What's your idea?
Same idea that somebody else threw out there. Heat it up; it'll loosen the epoxy. And then you pull the bolt out, and then what epoxy is remaining, you drill it out, and then you pour new epoxy, and you put a new bolt and pour new epoxy.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can imagine why that bolt broke is if he ended up using just straight off the shelf all thread.
Yeah.
Then maybe all thread is not very high strength generally.
That's like a 10
like grade 3, I think, or something like that. Yeah. It does have some tensile strength to it, but not the same as like once you get into a grade 8 or grade 10 bolt. And I wonder about that, you know, like. I've never looked into sourcing high strength all thread or I just interviewed Mark Krause. I've got that interview ready to put up right now. I was going to put it up today and I wanted to listen to it to make sure that the quality of it was good. And I think I actually got to up the volume on it a little bit to make it better. But dude, that's something I really wish we would have bugged him about a little bit more is mounting of a power hammer and talking about the foundations and stuff like that. We were basically going off about dies and heat treating of dies and stuff like that and creating dies. That was the main purpose of that conversation was because we started talking about it on one show a while back and somebody messaged us and they're like, why the fuck would you save that for a private conversation, you guys? That's prime conversation for the podcast. It's like, no kidding. That wasn't me. That was Nick. Hey, I'll message you in private, Justin. And then afterwards, Nick's like, yeah, no, you're right. That should be a ForgeCast Forge side chat. ForgeCast.
So if you had your choice of a dream hammer, what would you get?
Jeremy?
Anyang 66 pound or 66
kilogram.
I'd
personally go to the 112 kg just because why not?
You know what? Maybe it would be that because it's I talked to I can't remember the guy's name, but the Canada dealer guy or
James.
Whatever. Yeah, I talked with him briefly.
Casey.
Yeah, I think James is in the States, isn't he?
Yeah, James is down in the States, and Casey Valinsky's in Canada. Sorry.
That's right.
Yeah. People mixed up.
And I asked him what the if you can be as light with the 33 as you can with the 112 or whatever. And he said definitely, but you have more control with the 112 because it goes to the full, full 112, right? So. You can definitely do so. I was like, I'd definitely go with a bigger. And with my iron,
I think you get more dike.
I should have probably done the 25 ton, but you know,
was it a big jump to go from the 16 to the 25 as far as price?
I think it was another couple thousand or something. So it was enough. Yeah, it was enough, definitely. Yeah. because in dealing with Canadian dollars and American product is you pay for it for sure.
Yeah. Hey,
let me ask you about that, the frame on that thing. How thick of steel do they use for their frame?
That's a one and a quarter, I think. One. It's for sure bigger than an inch. Oh, it might be one and an eighth.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's the C frame.
Yeah.
So they need you, that's single beam strength there. You need, I was expecting you to tell me it was 2 inch.
Yeah. No, the where the dies are is probably 2.5. Gotta be a full 2.5.
Old measuring tape from your back pocket.
Right.
Hey, viewer, or okay, listeners, viewers.
So where the dies bolt
taken
into,
out a state measure.
It's 3 inches, and the frame itself is 1 inch.
It is, eh? Yeah. Interesting. Wow, I'm surprised it's only 1 inch. Wow. Damn. Crazy.
Yeah, and it's
maybe I am over engineering my press then.
Well, just like most of us, over engineer and overbuild everything, right?
I'd rather it never failed than maybe one day fail. Yeah.
I 100% agree.
Man, after talking to Mark Krause about power hammers, I'm like, oh God, those fucking mechanical hammers are scary. Shit. Yeah. I'm in the process of building 2 tire hammers and I'm like super, super stoked to get those things up and running because I talked to Derek Melton about them and he's just like, tire hammers are the shit. Like I barely even use my actual power hammer. I'm always on the tire hammer. It's like, okay. Well, it says a lot, man. Coming from Derek Melton. No, I don't think I'm going to, I'm planning to, well, I mean, unless I build them both and I get to this decision of like, well, hey, I could sell one of these and use the funds towards a self-contained. Maybe that'll, maybe that would be an option to go that one day. Cause I would love to have a self-contained air hammer for sure.
Right.
An Ang Yang or get a
Samak.
Samak, yeah. That'd be beautiful too. Yeah, it's tough though, man, to, you know, the tire hammer is easy. It's simple. It's junkyard shit, so I'm not worried about it. If something on it does break, it's like, I'll just weld her up again. On a self-contained air hammer, geesh, something starts going wrong on that thing, I'm going to shit myself, dude.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a little bit different there.
Is it like an engine with a piston to compress, to create the compressed air?
Compress the air, yeah.
Yeah. And if you fuck up your ram and it starts pissing out oil and stuff like that like crazy, and you've got to do a ram
repair.
Man, you got to got problems there, man. Or if your air system starts to mess up and you don't understand your air system, and you got to start, you know, calling up people to get some help on how to fix it, and or maybe your floor bolt breaks and now you've got a power hammer down because your fucking floor bolt. Steve Dupras listening to this going like, dude, stop, you're killing me. He messaged me the other day and he's like, so I'm all caught up, what happened to Saturday releases, what's going on, dude, where are they, you're gonna make me wait till Tuesday again. Sorry, man, it's like kind of random now, I guess, when I drop it, I don't know.
No, for sure. Had another question and it's gone. That train has left the station.
I do that, man. I go on these sidetrack tangents so bad that
I blame it on breathing in metal dust. That's it. A lot of metal dust.
I thought you were gonna say something else, but
that too. Yeah. what are you talking about?
Who? Where? Huh? Tell me something. What do you think your blacksmithing, knife-making endeavor has done for you as far as a life lesson? Is there a life lesson that you can share with us that you've gotten from all of this?
Maybe not necessarily a life lesson, but it's definitely changed my... I was more aggressive, more not necessarily angry, but... it's definitely calmed me down to just kind of go with the flow and it is what it is kind of thing, right? Just definitely slowed me down and kind of just enjoy the enjoy making things, and you know, the frustration level like gets out when I'm hammering on things and stuff, right? So
yeah there is a certain I don't know, it's that eureka moment when you figure out what you're building and you figure out how to, oh, I can do this and make it better. So you find that quite often. Do you find that more in when you're making knives or when you're fabricating something or building a different project?
I think it's all a little bit different for every different project, but I think when I'm making knives, because I like to forge to shape for the most part. For the stainless knives that I've been doing, obviously it's more of a stock removal, but definitely hammering and forging a knife from a bar of steel to the shape of a knife is really what I love to do, right?
Yeah. And you said that you're making more stainless knives, so you must have a kiln. What are you running for a kiln?
I'm not one to go with the small stuff. So I want to make some substantial knives and kind of small swords and stuff. So I got a Paragon 36.
36.
Oh boy!
Oh yeah.
So I just went for it, right? And
yeah,
you can't only do it once, but if you do it twice, then it costs you a lot more. So.
Buy once, cry once, right?
Right. Yeah.
Shout out to Maritime Knife Supply for hooking up the Paragon and Even Heat kilns.
There you go. Actually,
that was from Canadian.
you do know that this show is sponsored,
right? So yeah, Lawrence is great, and I love that film.
nice recovery sir, well done.
I do want to get a second as well, though, a smaller one eventually, for tempering, because you know you can only temper so much with toaster oven.
Right?
It is nice.
Well,
with
you can still temper in that as well.
But if you quench, it's just what I've read. Maybe you can tell me different. What I've read and seen, to temper it right away or as soon as possible after a quench is best, right?
Yeah.
That's so, my understanding is you want to
temper just so that
soon as possible.
The oven's got to cool down from 1900 to 400. Takes quite a while.
I think you still have time. You still have time to do that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, actually,
certain steels are more susceptible to it than others.
Yeah. Okay. That's true. I actually stopped in to see Chris Green here last week. Nice. And a half ago, something like that. Yeah. He was tempering a batch of Damascus in his kiln. So, yeah. But, super awesome guy. I love Chris Green. Actually, I'm going to take a course with him in March.
Nice.
Yeah. I mean,
he's such good knives, dude.
Man, he is. He's an artist. I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, again, you hang out with that guy and you feel like a hack.
I can imagine that.
Yeah.
For sure.
But, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. So, yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Man, talking about these kilns, I picked myself up a Paragon kiln as well. Sorry, Maritime Knife Supply. I found it used on Kijiji or Marketplace, whatever. and there's no competition with this thing compared to the real deal, because this thing is like 5-inch by 5-inch interior, maybe, I think. It's pretty small, like 5 by 4.5.
They're not even 5 inches.
You know which one I'm talking, right? You know exactly which one I'm talking about.
36 inches long, but it's only like a 5x5 hole.
I didn't realize we were having a dick size competition here, buddy. Come on now.
Oof. Ooh, no. There was ever a time I didn't want to see a camera in here.
Thank God we're the only people that get to see this, right?
Right.
You can always turn your camera off. Oh, wait, you'll still see ours, though. Okay, oh, you're out of luck. Sorry, Nick. You can leave now if you want. Where are we going with this again? I'm totally sidetracked by dicks now.
Paragon Forge, right. 5-inch opening.
Kilns, right. Heat treating, yeah. Right. Kicking myself, dude. I don't know how many times I have seen one of the large pottery kilns, like the big fucking hexagonal ones, for cheap. I'm talking like $100, man. I've seen them on Marketplace for.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Freaking Brian House has a freaking tutorial online on how to convert the PID on one of those things to run. That's great idea right there. And again,
that is a good idea.
Buying, there's so many people that'll be like, dude, just go and buy the real deal because you'll thank yourself with the hustling and fussling that you're going to go through trying to build the thing, plus using it afterwards. Too. The size of your orifice. We it's going to have to be for a 36-inch one.
You can hang your material.
Yes.
That's a good thing about them. But. It's
terrible when you touch the sides, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't know. I've never touched the sides. I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know, man.
Chucking a hot dog down a hallway.
Right. Woo. One of my favorite NoFX songs. Actually, I didn't give you guys a warning for this. New segment of the week. Song choice. What have you guys been listening to in the shop lately?
I do a lot of Ozzy's Boneyard on the Sirius, so it's a lot of Megadeth and from Megadeth to Slayer. My go-to is
that's
is
solid.
Slayer or
that's
AC/DC.
Solid.
Well, pick one, bud.
All-time favorite band is AC/DC.
Okay, give me a song.
Just throw me in the spotlight like that, eh?
Yeah, how I do it.
Did you see that train running by? Yeah, there you go.
That's how I do it, man.
It'd be like...
I didn't have...
Hell's Bells or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
Who made who?
I like that better. I like that better. Who made who? Yeah. You did. You made this. Yeah. I made this hoodoo.
Right.
It's really funny that you ask what we've been listening to lately, because I don't know if you guys been watching The Last of Us. Have you guys watched The Last of Us here? Have you seen that show?
Nah, man. I don't watch TV, dude. Sorry, bud.
Well, it was filmed in Alberta, so I thought, hey, I've got to watch this show, and there's a lot of people that have been watching it, and so last week they were talking a lot about Linda Ronstadt. So guess what I've been listening to in the shop?
Seriously?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Linda Ronstadt.
You're gonna fuck up the playlist with Linda Ronstadt?
Oh, it's good. It's good.
Okay.
It's good, man.
What song?
You know. You're no good.
You're no good?
You're no good. Yeah, you're no good. Check it out. Or Blue Bayou. Man, that's an awesome song. Yeah.
No, we'll go with you're no good.
You're no good. Yeah.
Okay.
You're no good. You're no good. You're no good, baby. You're no good. That's awesome.
That sounds familiar, actually. It's probably, I wouldn't doubt that. My mom and dad listen to a lot of that style of music. I bet you.
Hey, it's classic country. It's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. I probably have heard it lots before then.
Oh, yeah. You have definitely heard it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going with Psychedelic Porn Comforts. And
wow.
Found God in a Tomato.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. But Linda Ronstadt, that's where you draw the line. I got it. I got it.
No, Celine Dion, dude.
Woo! Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's Celine, some, there's I love you, Celine. I'm breaking up here. Oh, I just said Celine Dion.
Yeah, I mean, I'll listen to Linda Ronstadt, but Celine Dion? No, sir. Thank you very much.
But Celine, I love you, Celine.
Yeah.
You know what, dude? One last thing I got to bug you about, just to make sure that we nail this one out, bud. Tried out the Tulare linseed oil yet?
I have some, that small, whatever come in the small, like the
flax wax.
Yes, I've got that. And I have a 4-liter jug of the Tulare linseed oil.
Look at this guy.
Nice.
I do want some of his paint too. It looks really quite incredible. I've got an old barn.
Yeah.
I got an old brown barn. It's 56 by 26 or something on my property. That's brown. I keep calling it the red barn, but I want to slap a coat of the Twiller's red paint on it. So nice. I'm going to try and get that hooked up for this summer.
Yeah.
If he's got the production for the paint.
I owe him a fire poker. I told him I was going to do a fire poker for him. That was like 2 months ago. Son of a bitch. No wonder why he stopped talking to me.
Lando, come on, man.
I don't even know if I'm still sponsored by him. I just love him that much that I still read it out. I love you, Dawson. You're the best.
I think if you forgot the fire poker, you're probably forgiven. Yeah,
It's not forgotten about, dude. It's on my list of things that need to be done. I got a few things. I got a hammer that somebody wants me to make them, even though I don't make hammers anymore. And that was a short-lived stint, man. I made like 25 hammers, and I was like, yep, enough of that.
I've got to make a set of Damascus chisels, like wood chisels.
That'll be nice.
Not sure how I'm going to do that. I mean, I'm going to do it.
If Nick was here, you probably just gave him a boner.
Yeah.
He's who you want to talk to about that right there.
Yeah. I think what I really need to do is just temper and then hardness test as I temper, and then just temper them until I bring that hardness down to a point where it can still retain that edge, but we're not going to have it splintering all over the place, right? Because you got to hit those suckers, right?
On the underwood.
Oh, not want like actual those style chisels. I was thinking for some stupid reason I'm thinking lathe chisels.
Well, yeah, no, and well, yeah, like woodworkers, you know, chisels,
not turning tools, like a fucking idiot. Yeah. Words, Lyndon.
But even those, you don't want those super hard either. I mean, you're flipping a log around in a circle and throwing a piece of steel into it. Yeah, you don't want it super hard.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is a chart on, I Googled it and I printed it out for my shop. There's a heat treating chart and it tells you what level you want to temper pretty much everything to, man.
Yeah.
Temper chart.
I do most of my tempering and heat treating. I follow the Knife Steel Nerds book. What's it called? The Knife Engineering Steel Heat.
Knife Engineering. The Bible. The Bible.
And if you want to pick up that book, Maritime Knife Supply carries it.
Yep.
You bet.
That's a great book.
So 420 is knives and hammers, which I don't necessarily agree with hammers being tempered at that level. Reamers, lathe tools, scrapers, cutters, that's going up a little bit higher. 440, 450 is twist drills for hard use. 460 starts getting into dies, punches, bits, reamers. Again, I can disagree with that on dies. They can get tempered a lot higher up than that, too. Large taps at 480, axes, wood chisels, drifts being tempered at 500. I think I can, I could understand that with axes. I would say hammers should be in that range too, though, personally.
Yeah.
That's, I usually temper my hammers up about 450 more. I was doing them at 400 for the longest time, and I wasn't necessarily happy at that level because I was getting chipping on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they
which
got,
makes sense.
Softer.
I mean, yeah.
Why'd you stop?
It all depends on the steel too, though. Why did I stop?
Yeah.
I think it was because people started asking me to make them hammers, to be honest. It's kind of fucked up, and I was worried that this was going to happen with the roses too, because I know this is a problem I have, is I like making the things I like to make, and as soon as somebody else wants me to make it for them, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll make it for them, and I make a couple of them, and I'm like, now other people have my thing that was my thing, and now I just like, not my thing anymore. Now I'm not excited about it as much as I was before, but I don't know. Well, I still have the excitement with the roses though. So it's not lost on everything.
You know what? Just knowing that you want to be a full-time blacksmith and give up the day job and do this full time, you're going to have to get used to that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
That's how you make money, is by other people having your stuff. So, yeah.
Hey man, I've worked production jobs lots in my lifetime, man. I know, I know how to put my helmet down and put my grinder to work, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Having flashbacks of working in the production facility, working midnights and just laying beads all night long, drinking copious amounts of Rockstar to try to stay alive.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Just before Christmas, I did a couple of artisan shows and craft shows and stuff. And the first one, I had a couple of steak flippers, and everything else was all knives. And I didn't sell one thing. I think I sold two steak flippers, but I didn't have any hooks. And I didn't, had a couple of fire pokers, but I didn't really sell a lot. So I was kind of discouraged. But then the next show I did, I made 37 Christmas trees. I made a bunch of the little quick hook twisted square bar candy canes. Those didn't sell at all. So the third show that I did, I actually, everybody that walked past me that looked at my table, I gave them a card and a cane. And there's, I do this and this, and I can do anything else that you want me to.
Nice.
Learning lesson, you have to have the smalls to go with the bigger dollar items.
Yeah,
in a short kind of scenario, right?
You know, the other thing, don't look at a trade show or one of those shows or a farmer's market or anything. Don't look at that as a moneymaker. Look at it as marketing.
Marketing,
exactly.
You know, getting my name, get out. Your big stack of cards and shake hands and engage with everyone and talk to them and.
The dog and pony show.
Yeah. The exposure that I got in the three shows that I did was amazing. It was in early October I got 500 cards. Right now I have maybe 120 left. So I've given out all that. I've sent a bunch with stickers. I got my new stickers and stuff. So I've anybody that's ordered anything from me, I sent them a sticker.
They get a sticker
and a card.
Yeah,
just recently. So,
yeah, no, for
maybe
sure.
You should have one in your mailbox pretty soon.
I just got it yesterday, buddy. Thank you very much. I'm gonna hurt your feelings, so I liked your old sticker better.
I still have some of those.
Well, but that's a nice fucking sticker, dude. That's a really fucking cool sticker.
It's JM Forge Fab makes JM stuff.
Okay.
Right. So, and I,
but that's the difference is that one's JM stuff, you know, JM Forge Lab.
Yeah.
I like your new sticker too, man. It's sweet how you designed it using the knives to make the letters.
And I drew it up in my sketchbook and took it to the place in town here, Big Country Printers, and they put it together and it's, I've got it all color with my cards are the same. So
nice.
Yeah, it works out really well. I like it.
The only reason I like your old sticker better is honestly the way that I put it on my toolbox, dude. I laid it over the corner of the lid of my toolbox, and I close the lid of my toolbox every day at the end of my workday. Every day I close my lid, I see your sticker, dude. It's right there in my face, and I'm just like, that looks so good, just over top of the corner, curled over the edges.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
There you go.
I'm putting your
stick. It's an anvil.
And that, yeah. It look, yeah. White sticker on a black toolbox looks good. This sticker is going to go inside the shop at home. That sticker's at work.
Yeah. Cool.
But one of these days that toolbox will be in the shop, man. Mark my word. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's such a scary thought of me not being at my day job anymore, man. I freaking love that job, and I look forward to days, so many days going to work. I actually look forward to going to work. There's not too many people that can say that, right? Where they're like, they wake up they're going to bed at night, and it's like, tomorrow's going to be a good day because I'm going to work, right? Yeah. Like, what? Who the fuck says that? I've actually said that lots of times before, knowing that tomorrow I'm going to go to work and have to do traction control testing on a 60-foot bus, which means taking out into an icy parking lot and make it slide a little bit.
Nice.
Sweet.
Fuck yeah. Fun. Sign me up, buddy. Let's go do it. Hold my beer.
Yeah.
Watch this.
To save time, make sure the kids are on it. All right, kids, right, we're going for a little ride.
We need to do this with full weight.
Yeah.
No, we use 55-gallon drums for that filled with water. Yeah.
I was really hoping you'd do your best auto impersonation as you skid that bus around.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, kids, hold on tight.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
Safety. Safety third. No, we take safety very seriously in our facility. So
yeah,
no fucking around there, man.
Yeah, we do too. That's why we have Disney Princess Band-Aids. Cut yourself, you get a Disney Princess Band-Aid.
That's high end safety right there.
It really is.
Yeah, you guys are on top of your first aid for sure.
Yeah. Ah, there we go. Yeah.
Roll a Band-Aid. Black tape.
Yep.
Do it tight enough, and it's a Turner kit.
Yeah.
Do you have any background in safety training or anything like that?
Not really for shop safety, but when I was in construction, I did civil construction. So basically, dug and installed storm sanitary water main and the services to property line. So dealing with sometimes 20, 30 foot deep holes, trenches, and putting in the shoring cage and stuff. So
right.
Definitely safety. Was everywhere, right? It had to be as safe as possible, because if you know that bank, that if that ditch caves in, that guy's not going to survive very well, if at all. So
and I
had level one first aid a few times.
There you go.
Whatever. So
that was gonna be like where I was going with that. Like, if you ever get into an accident in your shop, you have the ability to take care of yourself pretty quick. Yeah, you know what you're doing.
Yeah,
I so highly recommend that on everybody. I've had a girl coming by my shop recently to learn from me, if you may, because I have first aid training, like good first aid training. If something does happen in that shop, I feel very confident that I can take care of it.
Yeah.
I feel dumb that I haven't done any conversations with her on that yet. She's been in the shop three times already, and we not once have talked about safety in the shop yet.
Dude, it's got to be your first conversation every day.
Right?
Yeah. It's got to be your first conversation every day when you've got people in your shop, you know. I should send you our waiver just so you please. Got it.
That would yeah. be beautiful. Please. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah, will do. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a simple signing of a waiver. It waives responsibility virtually. No.
Well, I know Friday night, and I told her, I was like, you realize Friday night's like my jam session, right? She's like, yeah, I know. That's why I want to come hang out. I was like,
yeah.
Jam session means that I'm drinking my jams, though. Like, you're okay with that? Oh, yeah, totally. I figured that's what you meant, and that's cool with me. I want to come and actually hang out with you. And it's like, okay.
You know why you are letting her do this, why this is happening. Same reason that the three of us are here. We're passionate about blacksmithing. We're passionate about teaching other people. If, you know, and forgive me if I'm wrong, Jeremy, but if some kid came up to you and said, hey, can you show me how to make a knife? What would you say?
Definitely, yes.
Damn let's Skippy. Set up a time. Yeah. Yeah, come on in. Let's make a knife. It's because
I was busy, but I'm not anymore. Let's go do it, kid.
Dude, let's do it. Let's do it. Right. And that's the thing. I mean, one of the things that I love about this whole community is how supportive we are of each other. I mean,
fuck yeah.
I mean, right. Nick Tobin's brother had a big issue. Well, his brother's wife, and man, I've never met the guy. I've talked to him a couple times, and yeah. I sent him a knife. I thought that was awesome. Bought a couple tickets. Didn't win a damn thing. Yeah, I want my money back.
You too.
But he, what a great guy. I mean, you know, and man.
And the community. The
community
people,
raised. Right? Yeah. We raised 17 grand.
That's all awesome.
Told, I think it was closer to 23 with what.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Apparently I got 20. one of the. I was like, oh, 17 grand, good. That's all I need to know. Yeah. See you later.
Well, you stopped following when you realized he didn't win. You're like, I didn't win. I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out.
See you later. Screw this. Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys know who Neil Warren is? Maximus Knives?
Yeah.
You heard of his scenario lately? Yeah. So he's in a similar situation, kind of. In the essence that there's a waffle going on right now to help support his scenario. Yeah. His wife has left him in full custody of their child, leaving him having to quit his day job because his child requires 24/7 assistance. And Neil is like, holy fuck, how do I do this? And a few guys have been kind enough to say, dude, we got your back. This is what we do as a community. Have reached out to a whack load of makers. There's over 40 people that are donating to the cause, myself included. I'm sending a rose. One of my stainless steel roses is going to be going in for the package. And like I said, 40 other people are helping put into this cause. It's a community driven event. Like you were saying, our community is so amazing, so beautiful. And I can't kind of take my words back a little bit on a previous comment that I made on Facebook a few weeks ago there about the snowboarding industry, because I saw a lot of shady stuff in the snowboarding industry I wasn't too keen on. But at the same time, on a spectrum, there's a lot of good stuff in the snowboarding industry on the same basis, where it's community driven. When you get into the community side of snowboarding, it's solid. There's some solid people there, dude, and passion driven, man. You know, it's what it is about us people that have passion and the drive behind it. Shit, I look at my mother-in-law and my father-in-law that's passed away now, but the drive that they had for the community, they were part of victim associations.
Victim services?
They my my mother and father in law started MOVA, which is a essentially a victim advocate group here in Manitoba. They started that. They created that here in Manitoba and changed laws. They freaking changed laws, man, to help victims.
Yeah.
Like, passion, though. That's what it was. It took passion to do that. Unfortunately, passion driven by an unfortunate circumstance in their lives, but passion nonetheless. And that passion still holds true with my mother-in-law to this day. It's
good.
It does. Passion does a lot of good. If you can do bad things too, though, right?
Yeah.
But that is when you find your true passion. You kind of, you almost know it in a way once you hit it, hey?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Kind of a weird feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, like for sure.
You kind of wake up one day and you're like, I'm fulfilled. Like, not fulfilled to the extent of like, I don't need to do anything else in my life, but I found my place. I'm no longer lost in this world.
I think you go to bed and you wake up happier.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I feel that's how I feel with knife making and blacksmithing and stuff is I've found my niche that I'm going to do to. I'm semi-retired now, making knives kind of full-time and with a part-time job, so I'm very busy.
Yeah.
I don't sit still very often or for very long. This is probably the longest I've sat with being awake for a long time. But definitely, I feel that way. I'm passion. This is a passion that I'm chasing and loving every minute of it. Learning new 100%. Things every day and.
Yeah, lots to learn, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
This is kind of funny that we're talking about this because last night I bugged my wife to go for a hot tub, even though it was minus 40 outside. I was like, let's go for a hot tub. It'll be tough and it'll probably be quick, but let's go for
a
hot tub.
Is this another story about passion? Is this another story about passion?
In a different essence, man.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. No passion happening this time of the month, buddy.
Yeah. Whoa. All right.
I like that, bud. But fuck, where was I going with it again now? Shit. Totally lost my train of thought. Damn it. You fucked me up, man, saying that shit. Oh, it? Damn it, totally forgot.
So you go for a hot tub at minus 40.
No, we didn't go for a hot tub. Yeah, I can't remember why now. Shit, there was a good story there.
It's because it was minus 40, man.
It was probably probably going to be a joke that was involved in all that, and I
totally
lost it. I was son of a bitch. Yeah. You got any dad jokes, buddy? You want to bring us to an end with a dad joke?
I like jokes. I like telling them, but I'm really so bad for them. I got a great memory. It's just really short.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's 2 hours into this, boys and girls. Let's wrap it up and call it a night, maybe. What do you think?
That sounds good. The Kraken attacks Alberta is waiting for me. So
nice.
Yeah. About to attack.
It's about to attack. Yeah.
You remember how we close this off, Nick?
Take off,
hosers. All right. Well, you know what? It was a good chat. I felt like that was a good personal chat. You know, it wasn't this like, we don't know you and we want to like know all these crazy things. I felt like that was like a like we know each other kind of conversation. And it was just like shoot the shit.
It was weird. It was good.
Even though we don't know each other.
Oh, we chatted a couple times, and but yeah, that's yeah. true, right? This is the first time actually talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a pretty laid back guy, Jeremy, so I respect that. Right. Good.
Thank you.
Could yeah, definitely find myself hanging out with you.
If you're ever in the Quesnel area.
Yeah. There you go. Well,
fucking 30 centimeters of snow sounds right good, I'll tell you what.
Or 30 inches. It was 30 inches last night in the past couple of days.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wish I was there right now, yeah. but I tell you what. There's a ski resort near there?
I think yeah, I bugged my... 20K down the road, down the Barkerville Highway, further away from, I can't recall what it's called though. One of the times I went, when I first moved here, I drove up and, drove up the 2400 road and came out to the top of the mountain. And I'm looking around and there's all these names on these trees. And I'm like, what's going on here? I didn't understand what was going on. And then I get a little bit higher up on the mountain and then there's ski lifts. I'm like, what the hell? I just drove to the top of the ski mountain, but off on the backside of it. Yeah. It was kind of
man.
Weird.
Up the cat tracks.
No, it's a Forest Service road that goes to the top of the mountain. And then it tied into the backside of the, the ski mountain or the tops of the ski mountain up the backside. Yeah. It was the weirdest
thing. Crazy.
I didn't even know there was a ski mountain there.
Dude, that sounds so cool. You could you get backcountry access then off of that road. That'd be so awesome.
Yeah, pretty much. You put take a skidoo up there in the winter when there's snow, right? But I went up and it was there was no snow. It was just all green. That was probably early October of last year. Not this past year, but the one before 2021.
Interesting.
Definitely cool experience.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, can you imagine that, driving to the top of a freaking ski hill? Right. Who does that?
yeah.
The middle of winter, that would be trippy.
Yeah.
Okay. here in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
We guys used to go 4x4ing on the ski hill. It was like one of the places to go hill climbing with your freaking jeeps. But our ski hill is a ditch.
Yeah. Come on, it's a hill. It's just a hill. It's not even a hill.
You're literally Winnipeg has what they call the floodway going around the city. It's a man-made river, essentially, that is in the wintertime is like bone dry. There's like a tiny creek at the bottom of it. In the peak of spring, it's like a lake, dude. It's huge. Yeah. What is the base of the ski lift is like it is fully submerged underwater, like 100 feet underwater type thing. Like this thing, that when that ditch fills with water, it fucking fills with water, dude.
Oh man.
But it's like maybe a 300 foot high hill or ditch. You actually start at the top of the hill. The chalet is at the top of the ski hill and you ski to the bottom of the hill and then take a tour.
That's awesome.
Up. Yeah, it's fucking cool, dude.
Did they do like a big cut and fill and just take all the earth that they took out of the hole and put it up on the
There you go. Right? Yeah.
Exactly what they did. Yeah. Very cool project that they did. Back in the 60s, I think, is when they built it. I'm not mistaken. They're still working on it to this. Still working on it to this day, and it's attached. There's a lock system in a town just north of Winnipeg that controls all of the floodwaters.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that's a really really cool diversion system, dude. Very very cool. And it literally saves the city of Winnipeg. If it wasn't for that diversion system, the city would have been like crazy underwater. Like the flood of 97, they call it the 100-year flood.
Yeah.
The city would have been like the majority of southern Manitoba was underwater, dude. Imagine like the southern Manitoba, like people, we talk about the size of a province. And, you know, if you look on a map, you'll quickly realize, holy shit, a province is like the size of like 10 states put together. It's like,
yeah.
California is like one of the largest states, and it's like barely a portion of any of our provinces minus the Maritimes. The Maritimes are like the states of Canada. They're relative in size, right? But like southern Manitoba is like taking North Dakota and South Dakota and putting it together, and that was underwater, dude. It was crazy. Main highways, you were driving down the main highway, you had no idea that there was anything but a highway driving through a lake, pretty much. It was insane.
Yeah, no, I remember that. Hey, like you mentioned
last year.
Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. You mentioned that you hunt. What do you hunt? What do you like to hunt?
I like moose is my favorite, but they're such a beautiful, majestic animal. It's kind of hard to shoot them. But it's not obviously, but you know.
Yeah, no, they're tasty, so you shoot them. The
favorite, yeah, right, yeah,
elk.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, elk.
But deer are more plentiful, so they're a little bit easier. So
you get wild pig out there at all?
No, they're a lot further south in the Kootenays.
Okay. Well, and they're starting to show up in central Alberta area too. So
yeah Manitoba's starting to get hit by them pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd love to get some wild boar, pig, or whatever.
Right? Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
No, for sure. It's really good.
Just found out on the weekend about a friend of mine that bought 40 acres of property just out the side of the city. And she's yep, you want to come hunting?
Nice. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Husband's down to have you by for sure, bud. Fuck yeah.
Awesome.
Sign me up. Bring the bow down.
Close season for those?
Pigs are year round.
They're
invasive. Funny. So
it's like the wolves here.
Yeah,
wolves are crazy. They're an awesome, beautiful, majestic animal, but they also eat all the good meat.
They're wild.
Well, and they're out of control. When they brought those back in the 90s, that was a horrible idea.
There's when I was hunting out of Likely, just a small town that's actually not far from here, but one of the locals was telling me that there was a pack of 60 south of PG, Prince George, and a pack of 80 north of Prince George.
Whoa,
that's a lot of wolves.
That's a lot of wolves.
You come across those, and as a hunter, you're only allowed to have 3 rounds in your gun. Well, you're screwed.
You're fucked.
yeah. There's no. Like, even if you got 5 of them on you, you're pretty fucked. You know, you gotta have the nice little smoky.
Yeah.
After you get your 3 rounds off, right?
Yeah. And
you can reload a little bit, but
yeah. Hopefully you don't miss.
This is where people who are so against guns don't get the fact. You know, like. Having a concealed firearm on you in a situation like that, that's your backup, that if you are being surrounded by a pack of wolves, like a little bit of chance of survival, fuck.
Not even
just a little bit.
You know what?
But to be able to carry a sidearm in the bush for self-preservation is a huge thing, right?
We're not talking downtown Vancouver or Winnipeg or Calgary or whatever. Yeah. We're talking middle of nowhere.
Like the population is like 35,000
after show anything
Pinal,
goes
so. Yeah,
how many?
The
35,000, I believe.
Oh wow, that's pretty decent sized town, actually. I didn't think it was that big.
Yeah,
and it has everything. It has everything except for Princess Auto, KMS Tools, and right, so the
Costco?
Three major things. No, no Costco either. But that's all an hour away up in Prince George.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's
so plan
really
your day.
Everything's within an hour. Right?
That's not bad. An hour is nothing. Yeah. That's good, dude. That's fucking wow. Nice.
Yeah.
So we've got like Lord Co and
Lord Co's good. Yeah.
So why does Quesnel exist? What is Quesnel? Quesnel. you got me fucking. Pre-show, Nikki's like, it's not Quesnel, it's Quenelle. I'm like, but there's an S in there. He's like, S is silent, buddy. And it's like, it doesn't say the yeah. S is silent, though.
Yeah.
Like, does it ever say the S is silent, Lando? Right. You got me there.
Everybody says it that way. If, when you read it, just like yeah. my last name, it's hard to pronunciate when you try yeah. and spell it, whether you read it or whatever, right? But
yeah.
Quesnel's a gold mining town. Okay. And it's where the Fraser River and the Quesnel River meet.
Okay.
And it's basically Barkerville is 110 kilometers east on the 24 on the Barkerville Highway, east of Quesnel, and that's the dead end. Like there's trails that go further, but Barkerville is a huge old gold mining town. Not huge, but
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still a town to this day, or is it a ghost town now? Or
it's a tourist attraction now, with the old like the old dirt roads with the elevated sidewalks, the wooden sidewalks and stuff, that kind of thing.
Dude, I grew
with the blacksmith and
all that. I grew up in a town with raised wooden sidewalks.
Nice.
They still fucking have them there, man. Flin Flon, Manitoba.
Yeah.
It's not a dirt road, though, still, is it?
There's lots of dirt roads still in town, but there's a lot of the roads are paved. They have some traffic lights there now.
Oh, wow. That's exciting news, eh?
Actually, a really good buddy of mine is from Flin Flon, and he's a few years older than you. You probably, I don't know.
I was
going
to say, I didn't know you considered me to be your good buddy, bud.
Aw. Yeah, thanks. Lando. Come on, buddy.
There Who's you your go. Good buddy?
Yeah. Ken Winichenko. Probably not.
Sorry,
Ken Winichenko?
Winichenko, sorry.
No. Like I say, he's, you know, in his 50s, so 10 years older than you at least, so.
Yeah. That makes sense. My mom knows him. I don't know.
Oh, hello.
My mom was a single lady. No, she's... She was a single lady, though, in Flin Flon for a few years there, so who knows?
There you go. Right? Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. He did grow some good weed. So.
Nice. Fuck. God damn it, Mom! Things Flin Flon was known for, eh? I wonder if they're still growing weed down there.
Yeah.
They were growing weed in the mine there for a while, eh?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it stays warm.
Exactly. Nice and warm.
Yeah.
You've been underground before?
Cool, no, but...
Cool when it needs to be and warm when it needs to be, right?
Yeah.
But, stable easy enough temperature. A nice moderate temperature all the time.
Yeah, well, and some mines get, like, stinking hot.
Stupid hot.
Oh, yeah. And humid. Humid.
Yeah. You know it, brother.
Be perfect for a pot plant. Just
How
get
do you
it
know
light.
This? How do you know about this?
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a smart Canadian. Motherfucker. Okay. I'm a smart
motherfucker. Holy fuck, self-proclaimed.
Actually, you know what? I really feel bad for people that get into an argument with me or disagree with me because I know they're wrong. So, yeah.
I just wouldn't recommend it because you're about to get proven.
I think it's one of those 80. Yeah, with just once.
Well, and then I was corrected.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. No, I think that's an 80.
I don't think
though.
That came out right.
No,
it no,
was
no,
supposed
no.
to be funnier, but in my head it was going to work, but it didn't.
I thought there was like a, you know, a repressed child abuse memory, you know. I was wrong. Daddy beat the hell out of me and now I'm much better.
No, nothing like that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Right on.
Oh boy. I was gonna go into mining as a out of high school. It was one of the things I was super interested in actually. I did a few stints of what do you call that? Job shadowing. Right. I job shadowed an engineer in the mine, and I also job shadowed a geologist in the mine. Both jobs, I was like, fuck it, this is life, man. This would be awesome. Yeah. If I could do this for the rest of my life. Like, the engineer literally was like, did nothing, dude. Like, drove. Like, let's go for a drive all day long and come look in my office. And I'm sure, like, it was job shadowing, right? Like,
yeah.
As an engineer, how do you actually show a kid in high school what you do for a job? Like,
yeah.
And like, I know this. I work with engineers. I essentially work side by side with a shit ton of engineers nowadays. And I see it, like, to show a kid what you do as an engineer would almost be impossible, especially in one day.
Yeah.
Like, you have to work with an engineer for a good week. And even after a week, you're not going to understand the scope of their job, dude. Like, that's...
They think differently. They think differently.
Yeah.
They really do.
They do.
Sure. We've had quite a few engineers come in for knife making classes. And they're different. It either goes really well. They're either really fixated on making sure everything is perfect, or
they try and change it.
They try to change it and don't understand that your knife gets smaller if you keep grinding it. So, yeah, but yeah.
Well, there's one engineer here actually that we had on the show, Connor Ashton. He was at the last hammer and we were working together. I'm impressed by that kid and his, I don't know, what do you call it? Fortitude. Like,
yeah,
fucking solid dude, man. Solid dude. And then there's other engineers I work with that are like, you can just tell they know what they've been told. And outside of that, their scope is like, gone. And it's like, if this doesn't correlate with exactly what I've learned in school or by the book, then it's not right. It's got to be exactly like this book said, or like I was taught. Otherwise, it's not right. And they learn pretty quick that there's more to it than that.
Reality.
Yeah. Reality kicks in within the first year of on the job work.
When I was first starting in construction, I did fire stopping, it was called, but basically sealing from in high rise concrete high rises downtown Vancouver. All the party walls had to be sealed for smoke and fire damage and water and all that sort of stuff or whatever. So, and the engineers would come in and say, well, you have to do this and this and this. And it was just absolutely not feasible to do it that way. Like, we have you have to use different material to, cause you know, almost like there was a self-leveling, smoke seal that you stuffed around all the pipes, on the floor. Well, they almost wanted to ask for the self-leveling to be on the ceiling, and self-leveling is in the name, right? Like, didn't make any sense to in a lot of different ways. And engineers they're smart and they pay a lot of money to get a ring to you know, make a lot of money, but
you know, the good old story behind those rings, right?
No.
What's this? I think I've heard this joke, but go for
that,
it.
The bridge that collapsed that killed like 300 people or something like that.
Yeah.
They took the steel from they took the steel from that bridge, and that's what they make all those rings out of.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That ring is a reminder. Don't fuck up.
Yeah. Is it an actual? No.
No, that's
no.
That's the blue collar story of that ring.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel bad for engineers because I mean you obviously go into that field wanting to make the world a better place. Why else would you get into engineering, right? You have an interest in seeing things built better,
right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what engineers do. And so many of them go into the workforce to realize that the bureaucracy of it just doesn't allow it. you get told what to do and you do as you're told. And outside of that,
yeah,
don't try so hard there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's every once in a while you get so lucky.
Yeah.
You get so lucky and you try so hard and it makes fruition for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rambling there. Just thinking in the top of my head, I'm like, well, I might be saying things about engineers I don't want to say.
I think that's fair. The engineers are fair game. They're big boys. They can handle it. Yeah. Big boys and girls, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. Hey, buddy, I got a jet, if that's okay.
Let's do it.
Yes.
On that note.
Right on. Gents. Thank you very much. Yeah. Good night.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Nice to meet you too, Jeremy. And good luck next hunting season.
Thank you.
Hope you get that moose. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I'll be getting my Alberta moose.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. I have moose walking on my property. Like I've got five acres. Like I said, I'm 10K from the Quinnell, and I get moose on the property. Not so much through the winter right now, but through the summer. Yeah. And I've seen more moose in the past year and a half that I've been here than I have in my whole previous 40 something years.
So, yeah. Isn't it so delicious?
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah. 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 You know what, Lando? Come on out to Alberta. I've got lots of moose in the freezer.
Nice.
Wow.
Stacy!
Road trip.
I'm leaving. I might not come back.
My kid's gone to bed. I just woke her up. Okay.
Oh, good job. Good job.
Good night.
Good night, guys. Have a good one.
Cheers.